something that we can see and summarize is starting in 72, this program has gone through more than 8,500 unique hybrids or varieties back then. So it's a pretty impressive genetic database right there. If we combine that with the different years and regions and hybrids, we are ending up with over 53,000 hybrid combinations in 50 years. Again, that's hybrids, environments, and years. What we see, 1972, 145 bushels to the acre. That was the average of the program on that year. And in 2021, we were already looking at 271 bushels to the acre, again, as an annual average.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost your yields with KWS Hybrid Rye featuring Pollen Plus technology. Learn more at kws.com.
Welcome to the... Let me try this again. Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I am Brian Arnell, and I'm coming to you from the campus of Oklahoma State University. Today, we have on Dr. Osler Ortiz, Assistant Professor of Corn and Emerging Crops at The Ohio State University. Dr. Ortiz is an Assistant Professor at The Ohio State, where his appointment spans extension, research, and teaching. With his roots in coffee production in Nicaragua and agronomic research across soybean and corn systems, he leads initiatives for developing and distributing science-based information concerning efficient, productive, and sustainable corn and emerging crop production systems for Ohio and beyond. Osler, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Brian, thank you for hosting me. Happy to be here.
You know, share with our audience a little bit about your pathway from growing up to ending up in Ohio as a corn and emerging crop systems.
Sure, I will do my best here. I grew up in a family farm environment, that's in northern Nicaragua. My family worked in coffee production for over three decades, my dad specifically. I was part of that operation in and out as opportunities were there. Then that kind of got me going into the agricultural space. From Nicaragua, I applied for admission in Zamorano University in Honduras. That's where I got my undergrad. I spent 4 years there. Before graduating, I had the opportunity to come to Kansas for an internship, for an undergrad internship. I did that working in soil fertility at Kansas State. Good connecting point for a master's degree in agronomy there. And that was my second to the last stop. Then I moved to Nebraska for my PhD, corn production, 3.5, 4 years. And before graduating in Nebraska, I was fortunate enough to have this job opportunity at Ohio State. So I finished in Nebraska December 21. I was started as a faculty member in January 2022. So that's kind of the trajectory. I have been at Ohio State for the last almost 4 years now.
So how long did it take you? Or have you always been intrigued in the row crop side of things? Because if you look to, I'm trying to remember what you did at Kansas, but Nebraska and Ohio, it's been row crops. Kansas, it was row crops too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so did you want to get into the row crops right off, or was that just the opportunity?
I would say probably a combination of events. Of course, working in coffee back home with my family, that's a perennial crop, and that's a different animal to what I have in front of me today. Yeah. However, when I came to the States, well, coffee was no longer an option unless I went to Hawaii. So I started into the ag crops space, soybeans, a lot of soybean work in Kansas for my master's. I had the opportunity, actually, it was a joint project between K-State and a research organization in Argentina, kind of the equivalent to the USDA here. So that was soybeans row crops, then corn row crops. And here at Ohio State, I have corn and emerging crops. Emerging crops also seen as a row crop. So that kind of the opportunities lend itself to row crops. Let's put it that way.
Are you ready to maximize your acres? Discover KWS Hybrid Rye, the high-yielding rye with Pollen Plus technology. Designed for superior growth and resilience, KWS Hybrid Rye helps you achieve greater productivity and profitability. Don't miss out on this innovative solution for your fields. Visit KWS.com today to learn more about how KWS Hybrid Rye can transform your farming practices. KWS Hybrid Rye, growing innovation for your future.
So what is emerging as far as crops in Ohio? And, you know, Ohio is very traditional. I think either corn and soy or forages, right? That's in my mind what Ohio is. What's an emerging crop for Ohio?
So I would say the default for Ohio are crops, agronomic crops, corn, soybeans, and wheat. We have some wheat production. Certainly soybean and corn being the top two. Mm-hmm. Now, the question of emerging crops, oh boy, that's a difficult one. I get the question here and there often, and there is not a silver bullet answer for that. The two projects that I have had in front of me for the last 3.5 years at Ohio State, one of them, we have been working on agronomic sunflowers. For seed, for oil. That's sunflowers planted in 30 inches, no different than corn. We did 3 years of research into that. We are wrapping up that project. We were looking at agronomic feasibility here in the state. Sunflower is not a relevant crop at this point. So we wanted to open up some ground there. That's one. The second one is you had Katrina Cornish as one of your invited guests in the past, Natural Rubber. Natural Rubber Alternatives, one of them is an intriguing one. It's a new opportunity. There is a big NSF project that Ohio State is leading, and that is looking at a couple of crop species that can potentially be grown as row crops across different regions in the U.S. So those are the two ones that I have been involved directly in the past 3.5 years, and we are making some progress. So I am happy with that. If you ask me the same question 5 years from now, who knows what the answer is going to be, but that's what the answer is today.
Let's chase the sunflower, because that is something, you know, Oklahoma has had a small tradition of sunflower. We don't have a lot of acres, but we do both a little bit of confectionery flour and bird seed flour. And then, of course, you spent time in Kansas, which historically used to be, you know, the sunflower state. I remember when I was young driving through Kansas, there was just mile after mile. So as you get that further north, I'm imagining sunflower production in Ohio is not quite the same as what I would think of it in Oklahoma. Is it fairly the same?
Well, I mean, yeah, we have very distinct differences. I mean, planting times will be drastically different between our two states. Now, the interesting part, yes, I agree with the Kansas note. I mean, I was in Kansas almost 3 years, and that is the nickname, the Sunflower State. I hardly saw a field out there. Yeah. Here in Ohio, what it looks like, agronomic sunflowers. So our project, we were looking at two different pathways, Brian. The first pathway, looking at sunflower as a full season crop option. That is planted in May, late April, early June, no different than corn, no different than soybeans. That's probably one of the more difficult sales moving forward, because you need to compromise your corn or your soybean acres. Now, the second option that we were looking at is as a double crop, following wheat or any small grain. That will be sunflowers planted mid-July. In that case, we are looking at shorter relative maturities that will be able to complete the cycle before we get kill frost in the fall. So we got some good results. There were years that were better than others. We got some, yield-wise, we can compete with the with other states in terms of yield potential. The other question that comes into play is market. Is there a market in Ohio? Is there an infrastructure like there is in other states? The answer is no. We don't have that, but we were just trying to tackle it from a foundational level. How much yield can we grow between different varieties, between different planting windows? So exciting results, and that's keeping us busy on the emerging crop side for the last few years.
What's your time frame from harvest, a wheat harvest, to first frost? What's that turn? Is that 45, 50 days? Or do you have, how long do you have between mid-July and first freeze?
So I would say if we are getting a sunflower crop planted in the middle of July, for sure we have at least, we have through August, through September. Those are two full months that are pretty safe. And then I would say our risk of frost really comes in sometime October. It can be mid-October, late October. So far, we are October 8th. We haven't had a frost yet this year. So that's a big question. So that's precisely right. I mean, there is a big risk when we are doing a double crop sunflower. We came across situations where, well, the crop didn't have enough time to reach a full cycle, and we were penalized in yields at that point.
Do you have any other double crops that are you guys utilizing double crop soy or sorghum?
The natural choice for a farmer doing any kind of double crop in Ohio will be double crop soybeans after wheat or small grains. So really the question, double crop sunflower will be a replacement or a parallel to double crop soybeans. Not much of sorghum. I teach about sorghum in one of my courses. Sorghum is a big crop in other states, but not quite here yet. Usually we have a lot of water, Brian, if that tells you something. I mean, sorghum usually, I remember in Kansas, sorghum was used more in the drier environments. Here we usually have a surplus.
That makes sense. So tell us about some of your other ongoing research right now.
Absolutely. So we touched on emerging crops. The other two buckets of research that I work with as part of my position is one, agronomic management in corn. That's probably the biggest one that keeps me busy most of the time. And then we have other ones, a second bucket that is more on the cropping system level. Cropping system meaning rotations with soybeans and wheat, meaning cover crops. On the agronomic management of corn, we have multiple things there. We are looking at planting dates. We have ongoing project, a new project on replanting decision thresholds. Often, that's a question that we get, not only here, it can be elsewhere. Hey, I planted 100,000 seeds. I am only getting 50,000 in the case of other crops. For corn, I planted 34,000 seeds. I am getting 20,000 plants. What should I do? So we're trying to revise some of the replanting thresholds for Ohio. This is a project that we have for corn and soy all together. That's a new one there. We also have looked at input management response in corn, that is fungicides, micronutrients, sulfur. We did that in the past couple of years. And a big one that we take a lot of good pride on is hybrid performance trials. As you might know, many universities had these programs in the past, hybrid performance tests, variety tests. A lot of those programs have unfortunately closed down for different reasons. Here at Ohio State, thankfully, we are still up and running. We have my position directly works with corn for that matter.
So it's interesting, Osler. You're talking about replant decisions, and I find it funny because your background is Kansas and Nebraska, which is the home of the low-pop mafia, those groups that were really investigating low population, especially in the western portions of Kansas and Nebraska. What have you found about what kind of stand loss you get moving from a plan 32,000, 34,000 can? Where's that breaking point from what you've seen so far?
Well, the bad news, good news, we are working on it. Bad news, this is the first season. We are sitting on the first season. I was walking the plots just earlier this week. Mm-hmm. Now, what we know from other projects that we had in past years is that, I mean, usually we are working together, corn and soybeans. I work with Laura Lindsay, soybean specialist, quite a bit. And what we have seen before is... low populations, what seemed to be a very low population, at least in soybeans, can still produce decent yields, or in some cases, better yields than a replanted scenario. For corn, not so much there. So we want to, that's the question that we have in front of us. We want to identify some of those thresholds. Back in the 90s, there were some numbers put out there at the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can very easily question if mid-1990s genetics and conditions were comparable to today. And the answer is not really. So we really owe to look at those thresholds again. And we are basically responding to farmers' questions. We are being asked, and we don't have hard numbers for it.
How does, if you're talking to the farmers, how does homogeneity or the stand variance impact those decisions? Because I'm assuming, let's say I have a 40% stand loss. It's not a perfect every third plant I lose. It's I have blocks. So how do you deal with that on your extension side with the discussion of, or maybe this is a better question. How do you deal with that on the research side? Is that stand loss is not likely uniform in a field, but you have to find a method to test low population.
Yeah, and that's one of the limitations of this project that we have going on. Yes, there is variability on a low pop scenario. There is a lot of variability. And you know, when a farmer is replanting, some of them might go and do a spot replant rather than an entire replant. Mm-hmm. The scenario we are looking at, we are assuming or taking it as a entire replant scenario. Basically, we want to develop yield potential numbers of, hey, if you have this many plants planted at this time of the year, this is the potential yield you get and how that changes over time. Because the point is, one of the issues there is you can have a low population planted the first week of May. Mm-hmm. And then you can have a much nicer population planted the last week of May, but you are losing that many days of the growing season already. So many times you are better off sticking around with the low pop from the first week of May. We are not really diving too much into the field variability question as of now. Rather, we are looking at the baseline information and go from there.
That's a lot of fun. Well, let's dive into something that you have a lot of background in. You're really enjoying from what I've seen on what you're doing is those performance tests, the hybrid performance studies. Give a little bit more background into what is a performance study.
Absolutely. So I kind of mentioned that before. There is Ohio Corn Performance Trials. We have ongoing programs for corn, soybeans, wheat, and a couple other things. My direct involvement is corn. What these programs do basically is evaluating commercially available hybrids that are available to farmers in my region, in our region. This is an open call that goes to all the seed industry here in the area. They can enter an unlimited number of hybrids of their choosing, and we will test those across 10, 12 locations in Ohio every year. What we are looking at is grain yield. Grain yield is one of the main variables that we are chasing here. And also, we try to complement that with some other agronomic characteristics. For instance, we have every year we report on lodging issues for any plot, any given hybrid, any given location. We are looking at percent of emergence. By the way, we are very consistently 95% emergence. Those are our top hybrids. So when somebody goes from 95% emergence down to 85, 75, that can raise a pretty big question mark, and that's where the replanting question comes into play. Why do we do that? Well, we know clearly, not only in Ohio, it's also true elsewhere, there can be very dramatic differences in yield just by changing your hybrid or just by changing your variety. Those swings, I mean, for corn, we have seen 100 bushel difference of a hybrid planted in the left four rows, and then you have a 100 plus bushels in the hybrid planted just a few feet away from that plot. So there is clearly a big difference there, and we are happy to be working on this and evaluate those differences. The results are available. They usually are public right around December, early January, hoping that we are still on time for influencing and informing those hybrid decisions that farmers are taking for the next crop season.
So how long has the OSU been doing these performance tests?
That's a pretty good question. This goes back all the way to 1972. So 1972 through 2025. As we speak, our crew, our field crew is lining up to start harvesting trials, harvesting corn, the corn performance trials sometime later this month, October. So 72 to 2025 has been more than 50 years. We had the opportunity to actually, when I came in a few years ago, I had the opportunity to start looking holistically at the data set in partnership with a few other people and some students in my team. So the first we had to do was make sure that we had a handy database that will represent the results all the way dating back to 72. And that was quite of a challenge. Right there, it was a one-year task. Just get us up to speed with all the data in a single spreadsheet. That was a full year of many hours of a couple of individuals, because in our public website, we have digital results from 2000 through 2024. Right now, there is nothing in the website preceding the 2000. So guess what? Results were available, but they were in printed books that we had to do an intense scanning process and digitalizing that information and making it to all into one shop.
So with all that effort and work to get the old data, what kind of value have been able to glean from hybrid performance studies? Well, one, hybrids in the 70s, it wasn't hybrids, it was variety. So what kind of data were you able to glean from some of that older What kind of information were you able to glean for some of that older data?
So, yeah, there are, I mean, with this big of a project or this big of a data set, there is a lot, many different messages that we have come to. We ended up putting a couple of publications on that work. Those are available in Agronomy Journal, open access. Some of the key findings from those, from the summary, holistic summary, something that we can see and summarize is starting in 72, this program has gone through more than 8,500 unique hybrids or varieties back then. So it's a pretty impressive genetic database right there. If we combine that with the different years and regions and hybrids, we are ending up with over 53,000 hybrid combinations in 50 years. Again, that's hybrids, environments, and years. What we see, 1972, 145 bushels to the acre. That was the average of the program on that year. And in 2021, we were already looking at 271 bushels to the acre, again, as an annual average. Within that number, you have a huge variation that is driven by the location, the year, and the hybrid itself. So we went from 145 bushels, Brian, in 72 to 271 in 2021. Some of the things that we see, how did we get there? Well, we know the hybrids are improving by the day, right? I mean, seed companies are actively working on those. There are new technologies, new traits being put out into the market. So genetics is a big factor. We can take very little credit on that. Now, seeding rates have increased quite a bit. Seeding rates have keep going for the higher. That's something that we can see in our results. The seeding rates we were using in the 70s have drastically changed to what we are using today. Seedling emergence, I mentioned emergence before. 85% was kind of a rough estimate what we had back then. Now we are talking 95%. That's a 10% increase. Stock lodging or crop standability in the field has dramatically improved over time as well. Cropping systems in the 70s were very different to cropping systems today. For instance, crop rotations have improved over time. As part of this test, we are seeing that we are working more so now in a corn, soybean, wheat rotation, while in the older years, we were many times doing corn after corn. Reduced tillage practices, that's something that we capture on the database as well, on this data set. Back in the day, a lot of conventional tillage. Today, we are using a lot more on the conservation side with reduced practices. So those are some of the key summaries or takeaways that we have been able to put together as far as that data set is concerned.
I guess one last question in this realm is, you know, what are the directions forward with these projects, the hybrid forward studies?
Well, like I said, thankfully, it's still up and running in 2025. One of the challenges, and we pointed that out very clearly in our couple of summaries that we published, is company or seed industry participation is decreasing over time and too fast. And that's one of the main reasons why many programs have had to come to an end. So we hope that there is still good hybrid participation, seed company, seed industry participation moving forward. We are still running strong. Last year, 2024, to give you a snip of what happened in the last year of the test, we were yielding anywhere 216 bushels to the acre in Northwest Ohio. We were doing 260 bushels to the acre in average in Southwest Ohio. Yields have a bigger range than that. We have things that are only producing not even 200 bushels to the acre, while we have hybrids that are close to pushing the 300 bushels to the acre. So these numbers just nicely keep going. Of course, there are variations. This year we had a dry season that might impact some of our results. Something else that we also draw into our results is the yields that we are reporting as part of this test are quite a bit of ways from the USDA farmer state average, which tells us there is a nice opportunity there for improvement. We need to recognize that we are working with hybrids that are selected by companies, so probably very top hybrids. So hybrid selection is key, and that's really a good starting point for any farming operation. It's not only the potential yield that we can achieve from that hybrid, but also it comes a series of other topics or issues, resistance to disease, crop standability when a storm comes, drought resistance. So all of those factors are key in this context.
It's time for our famous three.
Well, we got to wrap up, Osler. We've had a ton of fun, and I figured I've known you long enough to know that we would run out of time. So, but with that, we got to go through my three standard questions that all guests have to answer at some point. And first is, what's been a go-to work resource? Where do you go when you have questions on the daily?
Oh, man, I go OSU Extension. That's my first stop because I am answering questions from Ohio. Mm-hmm. But if I was in a different state, I would say extension networks across the different universities are really a to-go place to find some of my answers and resources for agronomic questions that I might come across.
Fantastic. Now, what do you do in your free time? Because I know you have a ton of it being an assistant professor.
Oh, boy. I was trying to do mountain biking the past 2 or 3 years. I think I did well. This year has been kind of slow. We welcome our first baby in the house. So my biking has been on hold, but we are having a lot of fun with raising a newborn and enjoying that every single day.
Absolutely. And finally, where do people go to find out more about the work you're doing at Ohio State?
I would say my university website, Ohio State. If you type my name, Department of Hort and Crop Science, it should pop up in there. In that webpage, we have listed some of the ongoing projects, some of the exciting things, resources, as well, links to the corn performance trials are there. So that's a good place to start with. I also teach a class, and that's all information listed there as well.
Well, fantastic. Folks, that wraps up another episode of the Crop Science Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today with our guest, Dr. Osler Ortiz, Assistant Professor of Corn and Emerging Crops at The Ohio State University. Remember, if you enjoyed what you listened to today, hit that subscribe button so that you get notifications every time we drop a new podcast. Also, make sure you share this video with your friends and your peers. Get this audience out there and let us grow the Crop Science Podcast Show. And finally, leave comments for any suggestions you may have or questions for our guest. Osler, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brian.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.